On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. Our guest today is Ilya Filipov, who leads the Alliance Initiative at Armilla AI, the first provider of affirmative general liability insurance for AI models. Ilya has over 20 years of experience in insurance, insurtech. We'll talk all about that. Talk a lot about AI today. Welcome to the show, Ilya.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and I want to start with where you're from originally, and we'll talk a little bit about how you got to where you are today, because it's an interesting journey.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. So I'm originally from North Macedonia, born and raised there. It's a country in southeastern Europe, part of former Yugoslavia. I came to the U.S. a long time ago for school, and like any immigrant in this great country, one thing led to another, and here we are. I'm talking to you, Peter, on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty cool. I am somewhat of a geography buff, so that area of the world, Macedonia, is really taken off from a tourist standpoint. Like it appears to be sort of landlocked around like Greece and Albania and Bulgaria and Serbia. It's like this thing stuck in the middle of all those countries that maybe people are going to more. But I wonder if that'll, you know, is Macedonia now on the hit list for tourists as well?
It's getting up there. I mean, the country has a lot of mountains, very pretty mountains. They lots of lakes. It's, to your point, it is landlocked, and it's still undiscovered. So it's a little bit underdeveloped relative to other European parts. So anyone backpacking that doesn't necessarily want to have the conventional tourist experience, they're coming to Macedonia, Albania, Bulgaria. There's a whole route that they would typically follow.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, if it's all right with you, and this podcast is going to be a little bit different than some of the ones we've done. We're doing a deep dive on understanding AI and insurance. I'm going to ask you a lot of dumb questions, Ilya, if that's okay with you, because I have a feeling a lot of people are looking at this whole thing in the same way they first looked at the telephone, the fax machine, you know, personal computers, email, internet, web, and now AI comes along and just is like exponentially going to change things. So people are a little wary, a little unsure, probably a little bit insecure. I know I am about it all. So maybe you could just break it down for us to start. What is AI really? And we're going to talk in the context today, if that's all right with you, on around the insurance industry and particularly marketing in the insurance industry.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And by the way, my mom once said there's no such thing as dumb questions. There are only dumb answers. Yeah. So the pressure's on me, right?
right.
Yes. So on a very simplistic way, what AI is essentially the ability of a machine to mimic human intelligence, learning from data or past experience, then making decisions, and what we're seeing right now, improving those decisions over time at a speed, scale, and consistency that no human team can match, or it's very hard to match. Mm. So why it matters to insurers? As someone who grew up in the industry, at its core, insurance was built on assessing and pricing risk, marketing and distributing your product to consumers and businesses, and making sure that those customers have minimal financial loss. And having spent my career in insurance, the one thing I can remember, there's no shortage of opportunities and problems to solve in the industry. But oftentimes we are bound by the challenge of capacity. And what AI does, it waives that. Think about how many times anyone in insurance has asked, I could do more if my budget just got approved to get an intern or get a junior associate to do this basic research and so forth. Well, guess what? AI just brought that intern or that associate to us. So machine learning from past experience and just doing the basic work so that we can focus on more of the strategic tasks of the job.
Right. So you brought up a couple terms there, like intern. You also talk a lot about agentic AI. What does that mean, agentic AI?
Essentially, agentic AI is the next level of artificial intelligence. It is so if you think about it, when ChatGPT showed up, large language models, you could essentially put a request or question and it would produce an answer, but oftentimes not necessarily thinking about what is your objective of that, what do you want to do, doing the planning and so forth. That you would typically do if you were to do a research. So what agentic AI does is it mimics the work of a human when they approach the problem. So if I am, for example, writing a creative brief, I would do a basic research. I would scope out the objective and so forth before I start writing the creative brief. So what agentic AI does is it replicates those steps. And instead of you doing the work, it does the work for you with a large language model or artificial intelligence in the back end, helping it process and think about those steps and producing the work at a similar or a better level that a human would do.
Right. So agentic essentially is like an agent, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So is we've seen other tools in this space before, like a lot of people have used chatbots, and a lot of insurance and organizations have used predictive analytics. How is it different than that? How has it evolved from those?
Oh, yes. So that's a great question. So chatbot is an a dumb AI based bot that could answer customer questions based on a library or something, but it wouldn't necessarily process the question and the information itself. It would still have to be programmed and get the guardrails itself. What agentic AI essentially takes the capability of the first generation chatbot, and it's essentially, it can be a chatbot as well, but takes that those capabilities of the chatbot and actually does the thinking and reasoning itself. Doesn't have to be programmed. So a chatbot, for example, could take the frequently asked questions a company would have, and if you ask them a question, it would produce an answer. Without necessarily thinking and connecting the dots of why you're asking that question and producing a different answer. To agentic AI, on the other hand, will do the same thing, but it will not be limited by the way you set it up and you program it. It would actually do a deeper research itself and reasoning, and it will produce a completely different a more tailored answer to what the customer is asking.
Yeah, so it sounds more human.
It's getting
Yeah.
close to it, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So what where are we with agentic AI? It's like from an application standpoint, where are you seeing it? You're seeing it everywhere now? Is that is it like LLM, large language models? What should we be thinking about there?
Yes, so that's a good question. So agentic AI, I mean, it can be applied pretty much everywhere. Think about anything that's any mundane task that's a human that human is doing that needs to be relieved. It would typically relate. So in marketing, that could be anything from something as basic as writing copy or producing an image or doing a research on a topic or writing a creative brief, all the way to reviewing that copy and critiquing it for a person. The early low-hanging fruit applications where we've seen agentic AI in marketing being deployed have been in social media marketing. So taking a great example, there are a few insurance companies that do this today. They would take an article or news, do a research, and then produce a social media campaign for that company, without the any interference from a human. Then we also see it in doing deep research on a topic. So pre-AI, if you wanted to discuss the implications of hypothetically Michigan's no-fault rules to consumer drivers, you would have to do a deep research about that yourself, study a bunch of documents, read them, and then create your own perspective. Agentic AI now replaces that and does that research for you. Or whether that's about the hard market or any legislative change, agentic AI essentially replaces that research, and a lot of companies are using it for that deep research. The next part piece that I see being used is in creative brief design. So anytime you launch a campaign, an initiative in marketing, your creative team would want to see a creative brief discussing the voice, what is the tone of the piece, and so forth. And that is a very valuable task, but it's time consuming. And there are several insurance carriers using it to design that creative brief with an agentic AI and produce it themselves.
You know, just to digress a little bit, it obviously I'm in the communications business myself, so it does ring true. We're seeing a lot of different uses and different potentials, and people sometimes are threatened by it. And in a more existential way, like, there's been a lot of articles, opinions about, you know what, Americans work too hard anyway. Let's do a 4-day work week. AI is going to make it possible. We're not going to need money in the future because we have AI doing everything. You know, work's going to change. Maybe we'll do more charity work. You know, we'll spend more time with our kids or whatever. The other side of that coin, I wonder where you come down on this, and maybe it's a scale, is no, like any other technology. Like, did the computer actually save us time? Well, it did, but it sure didn't. Did email save time when the average email takes 4 minutes to process, even if you're just deleting on average 4 minutes per email? And, you know, will AI save us time? Maybe, but then we're going to have jobs around AI too. I don't know. What do you think about that?
So first of all, as someone who grew up in Europe, I don't think the 4-day week is a function of the technology or the tasks. It's the function of society. I mean, there's a 4-day work in most of the European Union today.
I'll bet. Yeah, I'll bet.
So that's I think it's a matter of choice in society as opposed to technology. But I would, to answer your question directly, I would agree with you that the 4-day work is not necessarily going to come because of AI. We're still going to have a lot of things to do. So if you see historically, this hasn't been the case. I mean, people didn't stop working 40 hours or more just because they replaced going to the library to do a research on a topic with a Google search, or just because they replaced sending a fax with sending an email, or name the task, or filing the documents as opposed to storing them on a drive. Instead, what they did was they started doing more things and faster. So while you didn't have to necessarily send the fax because you could send an email, that just meant that you now could produce a little bit more through the website, get more customers, get a little bit more tailored in your strategies. And similarly with AI, just because people are not spending hours doing a research and developing creative brief or designing a campaign doesn't mean that they will cut their hours unless they choose to do so. Instead, they'll find more projects to do or enhance the precision of their existing work. And I'm in the boat to think that the companies that will take advantage of this and begin to do a lot more instead of working less are the ones that are going to win, just as that happened during the Internet Revolution, where the companies that took advantage of the web and started doing more with less, they essentially overtook the economy and acquired a lot of the other ones that kind of started to fall behind.
I agree with what you said about the 4-day work week. Not necessarily related to technology, but I think workers prefer it. But this 5-day work week came from like industrial England or something. It was just like, yeah, we're going to work 5 days a week. We're going to go to factories 5 days a week, and there's going to be 8 hours a day. 30 minutes for lunch or whatever it was. It was just kind of manufactured by the industry. And it just kind of hung around. But this, you think about it, it's like, why not six? Why not four?
No,
Why
I
not
mean,
work every day? I mean, how did this, it seems so random, you
it's
know?
a no, that's a good point. So I mean, this doesn't necessarily have to do anything with AI, but from what I know, the 5 day week came because the Industrial Revolution made the work so mundane and so repetitive, and the hours are a little bit longer versus when you're in the Agricultural Revolution. I mean, you wake up at 4 in the morning, you
Yeah.
feed the animals, you do a little bit of field work, and then you take a midday rest, or as they call it in Spain, siesta. Well, there was no need to do that. There was more need to have a repetitive long hours works with the machines, which made people a little bit more depressed and diminished them the marginal return. So they came up with, let's have a 5 day week and a weekend. Now, I don't know if AI is going to make the work more mundane. I mean, if nothing, I think the jury's still out. It might do that, but it also might make it a little bit more interesting, where, I mean, people will find it appealing to do work on the weekends. It might not be the work of their job, maybe a side project, but I think we still have to see what it will look like. But yeah, to your
Yeah,
point.
it's really fascinating how like a lot of the tasks can be handled by AI, but what other things would we do if we weren't doing all the repetitive? It's gonna evolve. It's gonna be really fascinating. And some of it might be utopian, some of it might be dystopian, where we're all headed with this. I don't know. There's a lot of movies about, you know, AI taking over the world, and it's interesting to think about the future, but the task at hand right now is you're in the weeds. I say that in the most affectionate way of what's happening with AI and the original insurtechs, and this may still be the case, but they came in with a lot of exuberance, youthful exuberance, coming from outside the industry mostly, looking to disrupt. You know, the whole independent agent and broker channel and creating, you know, first they wanted to be carriers, then they're like, oh, that's kind of hard. The regulators don't like us, so let's just become an MGA. So I think that intermediary space, agent, broker, MGA, other whatever, you know, program administrator, wholesaler, et cetera, that middle space where maybe they're on the hook for some of the risk, maybe they're not, but it's that space seems I hate to use this term easier, but it maybe it's quicker to start from scratch. And in your experience, Ilya, what would you say, you know, how could AI, how does AI and how could in the future make it even easier to stand up a new MGA?
Oh gosh, that's I don't think we have enough time to talk about that, because there's a lot on that topic that's been done. But I mean, AI can amplify anything that MGA does. Let's take from the beginning, identifying and pricing the risk. It can take it can produce synthetic data, and it can essentially develop the product itself without a human interface. Experience and price the product and do the analysis and so forth that would take months, if not years, to design. Then next thing that it can do is, if you think in essence, insurance, the concept of insurance is taking risk away from the customer and de-risking it and absorbing it on your balance sheet. And that's becoming a lot more challenging with the increasing number of catastrophic events, with new risks emerging like cyber or AI that we talked about. And what AI can do there is it essentially can create customer safety programs where it would minimize their risk so that de-risking becomes much less expensive. It would also can file the products, and it can bring any expert to the table, because the one thing that insurers have had historically is the advantage of knowledge of the industry, or the advantage of knowing the regulatory environment, the losses, and how to approach it. So AI can bring that knowledge out to the fingertips of anyone else. An agentic AI that's been trained on historical data can essentially replace the insurer and bring it to an engineer or any subject matter expert about what's the risk and how we can insure it. Then it can create the legal documents that customer, regulator, or broker would require in order to sell your products and so forth from scratch within the matter of seconds, and know what to position to with those people. And last but not least, it can operationalize. So in the MGA world, in the London market, it's very inefficient the way a product gets submitted. So it can take all this unstructured email submission and reposition it the way an underwriter would want to see it, so that whoever's the capacity provider can actually feel assured that the risk that they're insuring is actually something that they want to put on their balance sheet. So, long story short, what AI would do in that matter is it would even the field for anyone who's in the market to start playing fairly. So any subject matter expert, whether that's on climate change, whether that's on farming, they don't need to know insurance. AI can give them the path to do that.
Yeah, well, that's a game changer. They don't need to know insurance, right?
I mean, that is the, and to be frank with you, that is the utopian way. But like we saw with insurtechs, there's always some hidden variable that someone wouldn't think about, like catastrophic losses, or we had a lot of insurtechs who were insuring homes and cars in the 2010s, in the 2020s, and they kind of got a little bit burned with the new hard market environment and with some of the catastrophic losses that happened. So I'm sure that insurance companies and their expertise would have a niche application as well.
Okay, yeah. And it's a lot more I want to ask you.
Sorry.
Maybe our listeners are now starting to wonder about, like, is this a lot of, I guess, is this maybe too much hype? I mean, where are the risks you see with AI? And I know there's people have been talking about it. There's a whole cottage industry of lawyers who are getting involved in this, with reputational risk and so forth, and copyright, plagiarism, et cetera, with the use of AI. I know that's going to evolve. But what are some of the risks or misconceptions that insurance professionals should watch out for?
Oh, absolutely. So first and foremost, yes, there's a lot in AI, and I do believe that it will in the all things being equal at the end, it will amplify how we do work. But as with any technology, there are some risks that we need to be aware of, and those can be reputational, those can be also operational and legal. So this risk would stem from several resources. The first one that I would touch base, Peter, is inherent flaws of the model. So just like with a human, or when you hire someone at an entry level or an intern, every AI model head can be a little bit inaccurate, and just because it has been not been trained properly, and make mistakes. So as you're an insurer or an insurance marketer, you could face this risk by the model making a mistake because they potentially haven't been trained and so forth. So you would want to review those risks. Then you also have vendor risks, meaning that as an insurance company buys an AI model from a vendor, accounting for things like data privacy and security, model drifting, where does the vendor actually maintain the model and provide support with that? And another risk, and you alluded to this through your question about copyright, is a regulatory risk, meaning insurers are responsible for complying with state and federal regulations. So ensuring that when you're using AI, you're still staying compliant is very important. And making sure, and the other factor is for marketers specifically, is the copyright risk. Will the artwork or the copy that I've created, excuse me, be protected or not with the onset of AI? So there are a few things that have been very active in the past few months. The US Copyright Office issued a guideline saying that when an AI creates a artwork or copy based off of something that a human has created, is it still copyright protectable? Long story short, anything that AI creates is not copyright protectable, so anyone can use it. The second one, and there are a lot of lawsuits happening right now, is the artwork or the text that a person has created and has been used for training the AI model. Is that actually copyright protectable? And the jury's still out on that one. There are several lawsuits that have been happening. To be honest with you, a lot of media companies right now are negotiating with the AI providers on how to get paid for that, because there's a little bit of a gray area. But last but not least, will the AI model working for you actually make you compliant? So a great example for this, Peter, is if someone is deploying chatbot for service or for underwriting, that bot can actually hallucinate and produce wrong information and can make you non-compliant. I mean, a great example is Fair Housing Act for home insurers. That chatbot can inadvertently produce an incorrect information to the wrong person, to the specific person, that can make you actually get sued, and you want to make sure that you're protected with that, because that's a big risk as well. And last but not least, another risk with AI is the risk of complexity. So as AI models advance, they become more complex, that oftentimes they become a black box, and an insurer, whether it's a marketer, an underwriter, or on the distribution side, might not be able to explain how that AI model made a certain decision, which can cause an issue in a legal situation. However, to expand on the question, insurers can implement some steps to mitigate those risks. A basic one is a human in the loop, which means having a person sit and review the AI output itself, like you would do with an intern or an associate of yours. Then periodically auditing and revalidating what the AI agent's goals are, the constraints, and ensuring that it still works the way you intended to. And last but not least, having another one is implementing guardian agents or another AI agent checking the work on the agent that you're using to double check the work and make sure that there's nothing incorrect happening. And you also can implement guardrails for regrounding and so forth that are a little bit more technical.
So not to be facetious, although I guess I am, couldn't you have one of your interns or your agents check the AI output?
Yes, you can. If they're trained really well.
Yeah.
But today you check the output of your intern as well, right? I mean, no one would trust a 19-year-old producing a copy on insurance.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just thinking down the road a little bit, maybe. You know, it's...
Yes.
A little...
It's cool. You can actually create an agent who would check that work.
Yeah.
If your agent hallucinates, that other AI agent will actually check. And a lot of companies are doing that today, where that AI agent is actually checking the output and suggesting something, because it's very... the probability that both agents will be hallucinating at the same time is much lower than if one agent is hallucinating.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, if you think about the classic journalism ways, it's gotten truncated in recent years. But, you know, you'd have somebody go out and doing primary research, interviewing, you know, a senator or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then you have that person or a collection of people writing up, a feature story that is then edited for developmental purposes, you know, here's the stuff you've submitted, but you missed this whole angle on this, you know, that's a little bit of a more strategic editing. Then you have copy editing, and then you have proofreading. You know, all these steps could be, AI could play a role in some of that. I'm not saying it would be good, at least not right now, but, you know, you can see where if you're checking stuff, like, could AI check and say, hey, this other AI hallucinated. Is that even possible?
I mean, that's happening today. There are AI models to do that. Okay. Now, the one thing in your example with interviewing the senator, so instead of interviewing one senator and doing all that work, you could potentially interview 5 senators and have AI check the work and kind of do that whole thing. So your capacity, you can provide a little bit more different points of view while AI is doing, to your point, exactly what you said. does the copyright checking, does suggest bring a different point of view and all of those items, while you as the human are doing the conversation with the senator and getting that the feedback. But yeah, a lot of companies are using AI to check on the work of AI. No pun intended.
Yeah. So what's your thought about how insurance, you know, people who are in sales and marketing, what should they be doing right now? What should they be learning? Threat, opportunity, combination, you know, how can they become more capable? So not walking around scared or just waiting?
Well, first and foremost, don't be scared, because there's nothing to be scared about. I mean, if AI, as powerful as it is, it's still dumber than a human, and it will take a long time before it can actually outsmart us, if it will happen in our lifetime. Second and foremost, if you're looking to reposition your career with AI coming, think about this. It's a similar process as our parents followed when the internet came and we were entering the industry, and how they repositioned their career with the onslaught of the web and so forth. So first I would learn what AI is, the basic concepts and the potential. What is an agentic AI? How does it operate? How does it work? What are the different factors of that agentic AI, the different large language models that power it? What are the benefits, the advantages and disadvantages of each? The second part, and this is the most important part that a human would have in this new space, at least for the next 2, 3, maybe even 5 years, is prompting and training that AI model. So instead of the human doing the work, the AI model would do the work for the human, but the human would still have to teach the AI model how to do that work. So writing the correct prompt, training it, making the exact suggestion so that you get the precise information back, is something that if I'm a marketer in insurance today, that I would get trained on. And to be frank with you, that's actually good news for anyone in marketing, because one strength that marketers have had traditionally is they have been able to think critically, see different points of view, and take all these complex concepts and distill them so that an audience can actually read them. So now you can take all these complex concepts and distill them so that the AI model can understand them and can take and do the work for you. So, and if I was to answer your question again, if I was a marketer in insurance, the three things that I would have to do: learn the concepts. What is an AI? What is an agentic AI? How does it work? What goes into it? Then second part, learn how to develop prompts, how to train the AI model. And you don't need to be technical. You just need to be able to write clear, precise instructions. And the third thing is learn the applications that you can get that AI model. Think about, where are you struggling today from a timing perspective, from a time capacity perspective, to get stuff done, and start using AI there. And that will make you a much more powerful marketing professional, and position you really well for the new in the new environment.
Cool. That's really cool. Yeah, that makes sense. Those three things to me. I'm somewhere in the middle of those three myself. So besides those three things, anything else that you know, are there any myths about AI we should talk about, Ilya? Things that insurance execs maybe have been said or believe that you feel isn't really valid?
The main myth is that AI will take over the world.
Yeah.
Or that it will actually I mean, well, it does have risks that implementing AI in our value chain will actually bring the house down. And I mean, insurance as a industry is probably more risk averse than average, and the adoption rate might not be as aggressive as you would see in any other industries. However, at the end of the day, You do want to make sure that you are prepared because it will amplify the work and it will keep the insurance company more relevant and it will reduce the costs of doing business. So essentially, you don't necessarily want to lose relevance and be replaced by your competitor who's utilizing AI in their value chain. I
Yeah.
was one story to share. When I joined the insurance industry almost 20 years ago, the companies were still using fax to
Yeah.
get anything, and email was already very prevalent. Well, today, very rarely would anyone use fax machines. However, insurance started to embrace the internet more and more to a point where it's just the way we do business today. That change with artificial intelligence is going to happen much faster. So you want to make sure that you don't necessarily stagnate and become overly conservative with o overly cautious with the technology itself.
Yeah, that resonates. So tell us a little bit about Armilla, what you're doing there. I don't even know if I mentioned it earlier, but what does the company do? What are they all about?
Yeah, so we talked about the risks and we talked about the risks that AI brings. So as in long story short, Armilla exists to help companies de-risk and scale AI and to make the use of AI safe environment. So as companies deploy artificial intelligence, most AI models would, whether they're used in customer service, underwriting, pricing, and claims, are essentially black boxes. And companies are betting real capital and reputational risk on utilizing that artificial intelligence that they might not be able to fully explain, however, would amplify the work that they do and the output they do and the speed that they do and the lower down the cost of doing it. So going to deploy that artificial intelligence model without knowing how it operates can be dangerous. So what Armilla did, the folks at Armilla saw a massive blind spot that no one was underwriting and validating that the artificial intelligence itself, and there was no affirmative coverage on that AI model. So if a great example I would like to use, and this has been a It's kind of sa it's sad, but it's been in the news for the past few months. The company out of the Bay Area called Character Technologies deployed a companion chatbot, and that chatbot was designed to be a companion for human beings. However, in its conversation, that chatbot with a team took the conversation to another level, all the way to a point where it led to a suicide of that teen, and now they're being sued, and everyone's questioning AI. Armilla exists to prevent cases like this and eliminate that risk. It takes a look at your model or any AI model. It looks at the precision of that model. It looks at how it was designed, the data that it was trained. Then it recommends potential guardrails that the company should have in order to prevent any incidents like the one that I mentioned with Character Technologies. And last but not least, what's really cool about it provides insurance to back up their valuation with money so that if that chatbot hallucinates, it will pay for any lawsuits that might happen, any legal reviews and so forth, so that companies and enterprises that deploy their model, they can have be 100% sure in the safety of their model and the performance of it, and also have insurance to back up that safety as well financially.
Interesting. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's the first in AI insurance in the market, so it's
Yeah, you
very
said like
exciting.
insurance companies are risk. In a world of risk, insurance companies or insurance organizations are risk averse in a world, even though that's their business. But it's sort of like the next step of cyber insurance, right? It's similar but different, right? The AI
Yes.
coverage, yeah, right.
And I mean, maybe cyber will evolve one day in that direction. Today, cyber would exclude something that's called algorithmic failure, which means if there was no cyber breach and your model just purely hallucinates because it's inherent the risk of an AI model, cyber insurance wouldn't cover it, and that's where Armilla would come to pick it up. But yeah, it's like the next level of cyber, to your point.
What is the term hallucinate come from? I mean, it's a bizarre term. I mean, it covers a lot of ground. That's what they're aiming for, but it is, you know, you think of humans hallucinating, not machines.
Yeah, I mean, it's English is my second language, but I think it came from the 1960s in the
flower. Yeah, right.
But
I know, point, right?
Yeah, no. Yeah, so honestly, so the way an AI hallucinates is making up facts, making up information.
Making up stuff, yeah. Have you seen some really bizarre things?
Yes. I mean, I've seen, I right now have designed a few AI agents for small insurance agencies in the Cleveland area that are doing basic research. And the one issue that you have with the AI model is sometimes it will give you fake citations, fake sources, fake articles. It will make up articles that, hey, Harvard Business Review said XYZ. And that's why you need the human to check the work and make sure that it's very credible, or an AI model to make sure that to check that work and see if that article really exists. So that hallucination is really prevalent.
Mm.
That's why someone like Armilla AI can tell you what is the chances, what's the probability that hallucination will happen, mm-hmm. and tell you how you can prevent it from impeding your business and causing issues. So essentially, hallucination is the AI model making up information. But honestly, Peter, the first intern I had in my career was also prone to making up stuff. And so you do always have to pick it up.
Yeah, touche, for sure. So before I let you go, Iliots, how do you get your Macedonia mountain fix, like in Ohio? You're in Cleveland. Are there mountains there? I should probably know this, but
so yes, Eastern Ohio is on the foot of the Appalachian Mountains.
Okay, yeah.
So there are some mountains. West Virginia is nearby. Also have Pennsylvania. I also I used to live in Arizona quite a lot, and I still have a house there. So I go to Arizona quite a bit.
Mm.
And I mean, that's a totally different. So I do get my fix a lot, but also what I picked up in Cleveland, I picked up marathon running. So for whatever reason, running is big in Cleveland. So I'm getting my...
That's my, awesome.
Yeah.
You're doing, how many have you run?
I've done 8, counting, getting close to my 9th. But
oh, that's awesome.
I mean, it's a great community. I mean, endorphins definitely help with that. And mm-hmm. it was positive, and it's very nice. Like that's something that I didn't think I would be doing when I lived in Macedonia, but
yeah, that's I you know, in high school I was on a long distance team. We ran track. It was like a 5K was long distance.
Yeah, I mean, when you're at that age,
you're running, and you're running 26. I've done a half. I can't do a full. I you know, I would so enjoy it if I was into it, but my issue was the time, and of course the training time. And I'm sure you, like anything else, I mean, you make time for it. So if you want to do it, you make time for it. I get that.
But the interesting fact is you don't see many people running marathons, at least not in my group, that are in their 20s. Everyone's kind of already mid-level career, and they just want to switch up their daily routine a little bit. So yeah, it's something that's great.
Interesting.
I actually will be in your neck of the woods in October, running the DC Marine Corps Marathon. So
that's awesome. Yeah, that's a huge race. I think there's an anniversary. Is it the 50th anniversary this year?
Yes.
Maybe?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's.
Yeah, it's going to be a particularly big one. That is really, really incredible. They do a great job in the organization of it. To have that running around Northern Virginia and DC is pretty incredible. So enjoy that, my friend. And we'll see you at conferences. You know, we'll see you down the road at different things. I appreciate you making time for us. And good luck with AI. Good luck with Armilla. And we'll stay in touch, and appreciate you sharing all your details.
I'm excited for it. And I mean, find me on LinkedIn. And if you anyone that has any questions, I'd love to contribute, because I firmly believe that this is going to be it's going to be a career threshold pretty much just for anyone in marketing and knowing how AI works.
100%.
I'm very open to share any knowledge that I have.
Yeah, that's obvious. So thank you so much, Ilya. Have a great day.
Thanks,
take care,
you too,
my
and
friend.
I'll see you at IMCA Ignite.
Yeah, see you soon. Bye.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.